I've got Mayor Michael Bloomberg on the telephone. Mr. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning. White Castle's at 5 a.m., John?
Absolutely. I know that's not your kind of...
Were you going to bed or getting up at 5 a.m.?
I was getting up. I was starting my day. I was starting my day at 5 a.m. Been a busy couple of weeks. Nothing like it before.
Has been. Sorry I haven't been able to be with you, but there's just so many meetings and things to do, and I want to make sure we go out and see firsthand what's going and just try to reassure people that everybody's trying.
All right, what are you going to do? I think the biggest and probably most difficult question, though the gas is the headline, I think this one's even more difficult. What are you going to do about housing, and do you have any numbers on people you think you need to find housing for?
Well, about half the people who haven't had electricity and heat are in public housing, and we think by tonight or tomorrow, every one of them, their buildings will have electricity, and by early next week, they'll all have heat. So that's a group that we did have to worry about, but now do not have to worry about. There may be one or two buildings where there's real damage and we can't get the electricity or heat on, but that would be a relatively small number of people, and we can find places for them. The other group of people are people who've some in some big buildings, which we're trying to help get back, Mitchell Lama kinds of buildings, which we're trying to help them get back their electricity and heat. And then there's an awful lot of people in one and two family houses. These houses are all along the coast. The great American dream was to someday be able to, you know, live on the beach. And these people have worked hard all their lives and accomplished that. And what happened to them generally, we think something under 1,000 houses were really destroyed, but there were 70 or 80,000 houses that had some kind of water damage. A big chunk of those have their basements flooded, and the problem with that is, number one, of course, it destroys whatever they had in the basement, including the wallboard on the side, and if it went higher than that, it just destroyed the whole house. But their problem primarily is that heat and electricity is done by stuff in the basement, and the electric panel, once it gets salt water on it, you cannot turn on the electricity to that house until you replace that panel. Because salt water leaves a thin film on the outside of wires that electric current can go jump onto, and it can start fires. So if the utility company puts power on the street, you still can't turn it on until you go to every single house and either fix their panel, ascertain that they did not have water damage, or if you can't get into the house, disconnect the line to the house, because otherwise you can't turn on anybody in that block. And most of these people really are committed to staying in their homes. So there will be some people we have to find housing for, but the biggest group of people who are suffering are those who are in single and two-family homes without electricity or heat, and we're working very hard to try to do something to get to that. That number could be 20 or 30,000. We're not sure until you get in and see how much really, you know, one house did get flooded and one house didn't get flooded.
Who will take care of that, FEMA?
FEMA will pay money to help, and we're working with them trying to get a blanket amount of money. But fundamentally, the way FEMA works, if I understand it, and I've asked 10 times, and it's very complicated, if you have your own insurance, your own insurance company has to pay. If not that, you have to apply for a loan, a mortgage, to get money to fix it. And if not that, then FEMA steps in, and they step in up to a maximum of, I think it's $31,000. But our big problem is not who's going to pay for it. The first thing is to get power back so people can take a warm shower and have heat and get back to much more normal life. And then we can worry about the lost belongings and the cost and that sort of thing. The first thing, however, is something that influences their health, and that's most important.
The gas throughout the tri-state area has been a major headache, and I know as of to this morning, you go to odd even in New York City, Nassau, Suffolk counties. Why did that take so long to happen?
Well, the theory was that, in fact, there would be a lot of gas coming in, and there has been a lot of gas coming in, but it has not gotten a lot of gas stations to open, and there's some issues with some small distributing points where the trucks fill up. And you want to wait and see for a few days to see whether or not once the pipeline reopens and the refineries reopen, they were down because they didn't have electricity. There's no reason to worry about odd even if there's no gas at all coming into the system. Once the gas came in, you have to see what the behavior pattern is. And there's no guarantee that odd even is going to make a big difference. It's certainly not going to make for more gas. What it will do is to make the on half the days you won't have to stand in line. And in New Jersey, there's some evidence, although it's hard to measure, but there's some evidence that the lines were shorter. And yesterday, we've talked about it for a few days, and each day waiting to see if it got better. And if it didn't, then let's try something else.
That certainly makes sense. I think it will if we follow along with New Jersey. We will find out between now and Monday over the weekend. Why are only 25% of the gas stations in New York open? What do they tell you?
Well, originally it was that they didn't have electricity, although that problem has basically been solved. Also, a theory was that there just was no gas available, so that they couldn't, although you think they would have some gas in their tanks underground. I think it's Hess that owns their own stations, and they have been open. John Hess is a great New Yorker, and they've really made an effort to help. The other companies, BP and Exxon, they don't own their stations. They're independently owned, and some of these people just had other things to do, maybe, or who knows. I mean, we're trying to get a better handle on that. But regardless of why somebody's not opening it, they're not open, and we've got to make sure there's more gas. Presumably, if they have gas and they have electricity, they're in the business of selling, so they will open. And what we have done is we've put a police officer at every gas station that's open and are committed to doing that to any gas station that hasn't been open but will open, to make sure that there's security and people don't get pushing in the line and that sort of thing. But hopefully this will help. And the real answer, everybody, all the experts believe, is just with time. They really thought that the damage to some of these small distribution terminals was not anywhere near as extensive as it was when they finally got electricity back and then tried to get it going.
Yeah, you would think, to the point that you touched on, that gasoline distributors, gasoline station owners, are businessmen. They would want to be in business.
I assume that that's the case, so there's got to be some reason why. And I think part of it really is they just don't think that these terminals can fill the trucks anywhere near fast enough, and so they wouldn't get gas. They'd only be open for a couple of hours and maybe have to pay their employees whole day. I don't know.
What has been your reaction, your learning curve in wake of Sandy about emergencies? I know you and Joe Bruno have spent a lot of time on this.
I can just tell you, if I ever had respect for the different companies that come together and all the different city agencies before, that respect has doubled or tripled. I've never seen a group of people work as hard. This was the worst storm maybe the city has ever suffered. We had 40, 41, whatever the number finally is, tragedies of people who died. But given the severity of the storm, the preparations, I think saved an enormous number of lives, particularly the evacuation order. And then the response afterwards of making sure people had food and water and blankets, outpouring from individuals, but also all of the agencies of the city and other nonprofits and for-profit companies have come together. You know, we've raised $35 million already from generous New Yorkers. We've had an enormous number of volunteers. Our city workers, many of them have been working 12-hour shifts, 7 days a week, even while their houses were destroyed, and they're still at work. I went to talked to the family the other day there, went to visit the guy in the hospital. He was sanitation worker, a wire touched him, electrocuted him. He's going to live. but he was working 24/7 after having lost his house and worried about his parents having been moved. I think it was up in Westchester, and it's that kind of dedication. And people just have to understand, when there's so many things, there's just the fact that we've got it done, so we've made so much progress to date, I think is just amazing. I don't think any other city in the country could have remotely done what we did.
I was amazed when Bellevue and some of the other hospitals, for various reasons, had to be evacuated, and it went off virtually without a hitch.
No loss of life. Same thing with all of the nursing homes, John, and there were a lot of nursing homes and seniors' homes in the Zone A, the low-lying areas. I mean, what we've got to understand is we live on an island, and, you know, islands are surrounded by water, surprise, surprise, and there is going to be flooding. Now, there's some flooding in low-lying areas anytime. There's even this one newspaper I saw joked that there was one area that got flooded even when there was one cloud in the sky, but we are going to have flooding. Nobody anticipated something this big, and you can say, well, they should have anticipated this big, but what happens if the next time it's bigger? You can't build a wall up to the sky. When you live near the water, unfortunately, this is going to happen, and people say, well, you shouldn't build your house close to the beach. You certainly incur greater risks if you build a house closer to the beach. That's why insurance costs more for your house if it is close to the beach, or maybe even can't get insurance. But people want to do this, and they've wanted to do it for as long as people have lived. I guess in Europe they used to do it, and in America for the last, 200-300 years, from Florida to Maine, we build houses close to the beach. Storms come along, do terrible damage. The first responsibility, it seems to me, of us is to make sure people don't get killed or hurt. And after that, it's a decision that people make. And you just have to believe that where these houses along the south beach of Staten Island and along the Rockaways, places like that, all at the Connecticut coast, those people will rebuild their houses, or other people will buy their property and rebuild it.
Mr. Mayor, I know you got to go, and I'm going to let you go, but can you give us an update on the Brooklyn Battery Tunnel and the underpass?
I cannot. My understanding is not ready yet, but the Queens Midtown Tunnel did open today to cars only, I believe, both ways.
Yeah, all right. Very good. We'll talk with you next week, I hope.
Looking forward to it, John.
Thank you very much. Michael Bloomberg here this morning on the John Gambling Show. Let's go to Joe Bartlett right now for some more news. It's 8:30, and coming up, we're going to talk some film coming up in just a little bit, Joe.